Today on Movie Rollers, we talk about Sicario, Day of the Soldado, Eating Animals, and Sorry to Bother You. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yours, dear, as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings.
Hello.
Hello.
On July 3rd.
Yes.
The day before July 4th, which we will celebrate as citizens for the very first time.
Yes,
Rashmi and I.
We will.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
You became naturalized.
We did. We are natural.
Yes, you were unnatural before. Now you're naturalized, yes.
Well, we were, what were we, resident aliens?
You were
We were legal aliens.
Yes.
Which is always a funny term. I've always felt odd thinking of myself as an alien, because we associate them with outer space beings.
Yes.
Or good movies that you like to watch.
I love it.
I think the US is the only country that really uses the term aliens.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, and I think, other countries tend to refer to them as foreigners or immigrants, but...
Yeah, I do think of alien as...
monster.
Outside of this world, and not necessarily outside of this country. So it's a very, very particular definition.
Yeah.
Still,
and we have a good movie to talk about
longer. Yes, indeed.
Yes.
So,
considering we're talking about Sicario.
We've got three movies to talk about this week. And so we are going to skip our I Can't Find Anything to Watch on Netflix segment, although there's plenty to watch on Netflix in summer.
So much.
Should we just say one word, the word of the movie?
Why don't we give one movie title then to give a quick pick. That's going to kill Yazdi, I know.
No, that's fine. I shut off my Netflix, but off we go. Yes, I have my
Are you ready, we all?
Yes,
okay,
yes.
Bombshell, the Hedy Lamarr story.
Excellent recommendation. My recommendation is Certain Women, which came out last year.
Oh, you have to talk about that one now.
I know.
So good. In fact, we haven't seen it, but you told us about it, and I still want to watch it.
It's about three women, three imperfect lives, three stories, limited by circumstance. They seek a connection and search for more. And it's got a crackerjack cast. It includes Laura Dern, Michelle
Kristen.
Williams, Michelle Williams, and Kelly Reichardt directed it, and Kristen Stewart is in it as well.
Stewart. Yeah, I remember
so
that.
Kristen Stewart, Michelle Williams. And Laura Dern. They're three little stories surrounding these women who are all going through a particularly troubling time in their life, and they're all in a small Montana town, and just incredible.
My pick is the movie Blue Jasmine.
Brilliant movie.
Oh, yes.
Alec Baldwin, Kate Blanchett, and Sally Hawkins. It's a movie that I believe Kate Blanchett picked up her
Oscar
for, and it was directed by Woody Allen.
The great.
I'm not a huge Woody Allen fan, but this movie is one of my favorite movies that he's made. So
it's in the vein of Wimbledon rather than any of the other frivolous.
Match point.
I always call it Wimbledon. because there was a Wimbledon.
There was
Match Point, but it's much more in the vein of Match Point than it is, a New York story or any of the New York type.
Yeah, and I'm just going to say one thing. I think the story, the character of Jasmine as written by Woody Allen is a very unlikable kind of character. And I think Kate Blanchett single-handedly makes it so fascinating and so intriguing a person that she kind of rises above it. I really think she's exceptional.
I think she's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
So we didn't give you a chance to embellish yours. Any embellishments, Rashmi?
No, because I've talked about it before. It's a great documentary about a woman who was not only an amazing actress, but was actually the inventor of the internet. Not the internet as we know it today, but the www.
Yeah.
She's the one who invented the technology in a sense.
And she was like a inventor of so many things.
She had a ton of patents. It's a great story. It's a great documentary.
Okay, so Bombshell, Certain Women.
Bombshell, the Hedy Lamarr story.
On Netflix.
Yes, Certain Women on Netflix.
And Blue Jasmine also on Netflix.
All about great women.
All about great
women. I love it. Girl power.
How did that happen?
Yes, yes.
No hashtag me too on this podcast.
No.
Much. All right, moving on, then let's talk about one of our three movies. Where would you like to start?
These, all three are... Mm-hmm. Someone pick one.
I know, I'm worried this is going to be kind of a long podcast.
Well, here, so. It is so what it is. I think they deserve...
Yes.
These are... Let's start with Eating Animals.
Okay.
Get the documentary out of the
Get
way.
Get the documentary out of the way.
Okay.
Okay, so an examination of our dietary choices and the food that we put in our bodies is what this documentary is all about. This is actually based on... a memoir that was written by someone called Jonathan Safran Foer.
Yeah, he's a great writer.
He's a great writer.
Novelist,
actually. Yeah, and actually he started university for something completely different. I was reading about him today and dropped out and basically decided to do writing and has written quite a lot of material. Writing credits also go to Christopher Dylan Quinn. And this stars Natalie Portman. It doesn't really star Natalie Portman, but Natalie Portman is narrating the documentary. And I believe she has some producing rights as well on the movie. So, Yazdi, why don't you start us off this week?
Yeah, so I think this movie is not for the faint of heart, I should say up front, because it's right there in the title. It's about eating animals. And I haven't thought about this much, but I think... in a way, the movie was preaching to the converted, but I think the movie's making the case that if we, in our current times, are insisting on having meat on every meal, on every person's plate, then we have to industrialize the generation of meat, and we have to industrialize, you know, how that meat comes to your table. And because there is no oversight right now in the U.S. on how, you know, food, which is essentially a flesh of an animal, gets on your plate, it leads to gross, gross, gross abuses. And the movie really kind of speaks about that. And what I really liked about the movie is that it's not really preaching that we should all become vegans necessarily. I think it starts off at the very beginning with the premise that even 50 years ago, eating meat was not something that you did every day. People ate meat maybe once a week, maybe once every other week. And it was something, meat production, therefore, was not required in these large amounts. And there were these natural farms on which animals grew, and that was enough for the people. And maybe if we just went back to that, you know, and not insist on having meat all the time, at least that was my takeaway, that we could still reverse track. But I think the movie just completely broke me to see that in this, the most industrialized and supposedly most just nations in the world, we as human beings allow animals to be treated that way purely for capitalistic reasons. So I'll get off my soapbox.
Joe?
I mean, this is a very powerful movie and a very powerful topic. I think... every point that the movie makes is valid, and it's thought-provoking in that sense. I just felt that the movie is quite heavy-handed, and in some ways it undermines its message by pushing this... I mean, you say it's not trying to convince us all to be vegan. I find it the opposite. I felt that the overarching message seemed to be eating meat is wrong. And I think, for me... I think what it was trying to say was producing meat this way is a bad thing. But I kept feeling kind of judged for being a carnivore. So
interesting.
I found
really?
The movie very heavy-handed. And here's the thing. When I've seen movies of this kind before, that's usually led to some sort of impact in the way that we choose our life and our food. You know, I've seen movies like Food, Inc., we watched various
Forks over knives,
and they make you go away. And you know, sometimes the effect is transient. Sometimes it's a bit more deep seated. You know, it influences a choice. You know, we for one, you know, whenever there's an organic option for meat, we will go for that. Versus, and then that's certainly influence of documentaries that we've seen, rather than any other kind of social influence. But I just found that this movie was very heavy handed, and. And because of that, there was an inherent rejection that I had of its message, which led to almost zero behavior modification in the coming days, which saddens me to the extent that I think what the movie is trying to say is incredibly important. We've got to change using the power of the dollar, our choice as consumers how meat is produced. But
so again, the sign of a good documentary is always that we talk about the subject matter, not the documentary, which is what we're supposed to be doing here. But I think this is an example of a good documentary. So thoughts as we were waiting for the movie to start for me were, will this turn me veggie? And the second thought I had was, will this be as good as Food Inc., which I class as one of the best all-time documentaries about food? So one of the answers is yes, and one of the answers is maybe, and I'll let you guess which one. But I think this is definitely a worth-watching documentary.
Very eye-opening, yeah.
It's really, really well made. I think along the lines of you, Joe, I think that there is intentionally a lot of killing of animals in this documentary, and a lot of what we see is provided as a shock tactic to jolt us into doing something. So, yes, I did see it much more as a propaganda movie than, a very balanced documentary, but that's okay. I think this is very hard-hitting, and it's almost radicalized in the way that it tries to sell its message to you. So I agree with you. It's not for the faint-hearted, and that's the exact words I would use. In fact, I actually counted 6 walkouts during the movie, and I think there is a lot of sort of big corporations bad, independent farmers good. And although I inherently believe that, and I'm the shopper in the family, so Joe, you may not have seen a difference in what showed up on your plate, but it was different since the movie because I intentionally made that difference.
Good.
And like you said, you know, for many years now, we have been buying either organic where there's a choice or grass-fed, no antibiotics, et cetera, et cetera. I think there's room for more of a subtle argument, and I think it tries to attempt to do that with respect to the price of goods or the distribution of meat, etc. It does try and hit on those points, but mainly to me, it's sort of singing from the same chorus book as Al Gore or Goldie, who really preached this message about if we all went vegan, this would make a huge impact to climate change, right? And the impact of the industrialization of animals associated with huge climate change in the world. So I think it does do a really good job of sort of weaving in a lot of those messages. But I agree with Joe, it's, for me, verging on a little bit of propaganda.
So I had more of that reaction when I saw Forks Over Knives. Now, Food Inc. is exceptional. I love that documentary.
Yeah.
But when I saw Forks Over Knives, I did feel, you know, there were these pictures of, like, you know, overburnt meat and rotting beef, and you know, it was really doing this propaganda that, oh, it's horrible to eat meat. My takeaway from this movie was it's not necessarily saying that you should stop eating meat as much as it's saying we should not allow meat to get to our table if this is the process that we use. We cannot be amoral. We cannot treat animals so poorly. That was my takeaway. So my like you, Rashmi, my personal takeaway is, you know, I've been very blessed. I don't have to worry about the food that gets on my table. I'm blessed with that. So I'm willing to pay the couple extra dollars to get food where I'm not necessarily supporting these bad practices.
Right.
Where, you know, there is, you know,
you're voting with your dollar.
You're voting with your dollar. Where, you know, if I have a choice between, getting my chicken from a place where the chickens are able to run free versus they're, you know, cooped up where they never have, the chicken has never walked in its whole life because it just grew up in that same place and it was, there were 10 other chickens standing around it. So that was kind of my takeaway.
That's horrible. I shouldn't laugh at that, but I mean, thought of like just a chicken with standing around with 10 other chickens. It's a reality and they show that in this movie.
And the other thing, after I saw this, I was affected enough by this movie that I looked it up online, and there are a few clips of Q&A sessions between with this director, Christopher Dillon Quinn, as well as Jonathan Safran Foer, who wrote the book. And it's interesting that in the Q&A after the movies, they're both actually saying that they are not vegan and they're not vegetarian even, but they are more of an, they used a word like an optionalism, like, Once a month, they will eat something. They will eat beef or they will eat chicken, but they will not insist on having it every day. And I'm kind of moving that for health reasons and other reasons anyway, where I don't need to have, you know, meat on my plate every day. So I think if we just even started doing that, that's a good step
forward. I agree. And certainly, you know, it's Tuesday now and we've been vegetarian for the last 2 days. So,
oh, interesting.
Yeah, see, you didn't even notice. Yeah. No. Since we saw the movie last week, I did actually do another 2 days of vegetarian last week. So I agree with you, Yasti. I think it's powerful. And I think that unfortunately, we do need to be reminded by movies like this that there are other options and we should be thoughtful about where we spend our dollars. And in fact, not to get political, although we can now, the only way to show support or decline support for something is to use your money.
Yeah. So it's not as much don't eat meat as eat meat which has been humanely processed and no animals have been...
Right.
And well, they're going to be killed. They're going to be killed eventually. That is fine. But at least the life they live, they don't need to be in agony.
I felt that was what the movie was trying to say. It's just I felt judged in some ways. I think it was because... In part, you know, Natalie Portman is a very known kind of militant vegan, and the narration that she, the tone of the narration was a little bit dramatic and less matter of fact.
It was condescending.
Correct. Yeah. So that's probably why I'm reacting the way I did. I mean, I think, you know, that was kind of a misstep for me. I think there's an important message here that she wants to get across, but I really felt that it was coming from the hardcore meat is evil crowd. Yeah. And the message that the movie really importantly has for us is meat production needs to change. Let's, you know, let's accept the fact that meat is part of, you know, our diet today. You know, it's a natural thing if you believe.
Well, other animals eat other animals. So it's part of our...
Yeah. And I think, frankly, I mean, for those people that have never seen a documentary like Food Inc. or Forks Over Knives or any of these other food documentaries, I think you would be shocked to see how meat production happens.
No, I mean, again, I think the other message that kind of got lost for me in all of this, and it's a point I want to raise right now, is we struggle to get information on how our meat is made. I mean, you know, there's one thing to kind of make certain choices in the supermarket, but there is so much misdirection when you read any kind of food label else that, you know, and I've heard about things like, you know, grass finished versus grass fed. Most people won't know, but grass finished means the last meal that the cow had was basically a grass meal. And
well, then that was probably some corn product.
That's probably an exaggeration, but it was, you know, the last couple of months of their lives. So you think that this was a pasture raised, you know, animal, but this animal was raised in the same horrible conditions as other animals.
Yeah.
They just for the last couple of months, in order to get a certain flavor into the meat and change the fat profile, they put the animal on grass, which is also a problem if it's been fed corn all its life. So, you know, the big challenge here, and perhaps the biggest story, is, you know, let's change the labeling, let's get information out there. I mean, you know, it's one thing to make those choices in the supermarket, but what happens when you go to a restaurant? What happens when you go to a fast food chain? Like, you know, how are those meals? We need to know this so that we can make the choice, and the food industry is hiding this. And I think, you know, that again was a point that the movie was making, but because of its heavy-handedness, I felt got lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, and I, you know, you brought up Natalie Portman before, and look, I'm a big fan of Natalie Portman. I'll go watch any movie she's in, but I was shockingly surprised at how ineffective she was as a narrator for a documentary. I mean, she sounded very grim and like end of the world kind of, you know, there was a tone to her voice which was very, a little bit condescending and a little bit end of the world, like there is no hope. It just sounded very full of despair, which really doesn't serve this topic if you come from a place of bias already. I think you need to be pretty objective and let these videos speak for themselves.
Yes. Yeah.
It was very dramatic. I mean, I wrote down, the narration's really good, but she's like Queen Amidala warning us that the Empire's going rogue. I mean, it was very dramatic, but it was still enjoyable. I think she did a really, really good job. I can wind this one up. Look, I hope this does for agriculture what Blackfish did for orcas and what Super Size Me did for McDonald's. I think this is an exceptional must-see documentary. It's very well put together, easily an 8 out of 10.
Yeah, an 8 out of 10 for me as well. And I grant that the movie does kind of get carried away with its messaging a little bit. But if for nothing else, the movie has, you know, some really hard to watch videos, which just speak for themselves in terms of how, I hate to say it, corporations treat, you know, animals which are part of the process for getting meat to your table. And I cannot sleep at night knowing that somebody does this intentionally to a cow or somebody does that intentionally to chickens. So I think it's very eye-opening in that regard. And like you very, very eloquently said, Joe, I think it should at least make people demand legislatively that food be appropriately labeled so that, you know, let the people, you know, buying these meats make the choice at, you know, at the cash machine, at the supermarket counter. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to give this a 6. I just felt that the message was a little bit lost in the heavy-handedness of it. And I felt like, you know, all of these documentaries, I think, should provide you the information for that then leads to behavior modification. And again, in my particular personal case, you know, I was the very next day, I felt like I, without hesitation, you know, enjoyed a meal consisting of meat products without thinking about the consequences of where that meat had come from. And the better documentaries in this category have always given me pause when I take that next meal. Like,
that's where, a good where, job I cooked the meals then.
Where did this milk come from? Where did this ham come from? How was it produced? How did it get here? What kind of life did the animal lead? You know, these are kind of things that I've always felt I get from other documentaries. This one, I woke up as if I hadn't even seen the movie. And I think that's too bad. So, all right, let's move on. We have two more movies, Sicario and Sorry to Bother You. Where would you like to go?
Let's do Sicario.
Okay, so Sicario, Day of the Soldado. I should add its post-colon dual-barrel title part to it, is the sequel to Sicario from a few years ago. That movie was very famously released towards the end of the year. I feel like it missed a lot of the Oscar fanfare as a result of that, because even though I think their timing was trying to get that particular attention, the movie got lost in the shuffle. And for me, it ended up being probably one of my favorite movies of that year, apart from, you know, I saw it at the beginning of the following year. That movie starred Emily Blunt, directed by Denis Villeneuve, as I should say, and was written by Taylor Sheridan, who is one of my favorite writer directors as of late. He wrote Hell or High Water,
wonderful.
A movie that I
Wind River, yeah, was, Hell or High Water, yeah, so good.
Yeah, no, and Wind River was a movie that was probably ranked among my top 5 movies of last year. Yeah, that was the one with Jeremy Renner in it. And then he's also written the sequel to Sicario.
Day of Soldado.
He did not have a hand in the movie's direction. And Denis Villeneuve, I presume, was busy doing other things. So it brings back the character of Alejandro, played by Benicio del Toro, and introduces a federal border agent, Matt Graver, played by Josh Brolin. And in this movie, Day of the Soldado, a new chapter has begun in the drug war. There are no rules, and the cartels have become trafficking terrorists across the U.S. border. Kingpin. I'll just kind of say that's what this movie's premise is about: the basically the cross border traffic and the ways that perhaps covert government operations are employed to deal with some of that situation. So, again, I've mentioned Benicio del Toro, Josh Brolin. These are the main stars of the movie. I believe all three of us have seen Day of the Soldado. So, what did you guys think of it?
Okay, so prior to the movie starting, certainly the screening that we were in, we saw 3 trailers, which is unusual. And I just thought that they played those trailers on purpose. And I can't remember what they were for the life of me, but they were very dark. And I feel like they were to warm us up for what was to come. because this movie is so dark and violent. And I never thought I would say this, but I think it's actually better than the original. And I actually did some homework and watched the original again. And I confirm this one is better than the original. Much as I actually loved the original and thought, oh my God, what could be better than the original? This one, for me. I love this movie Benicio del Toro and Josh Brolin are so badass, and I feel like this has a really complete and good story.
Yes, Dee.
Yeah, so I'm a great admirer of the original Sicario, and I think Roger Deakins' work was just incredible.
That's right. Yeah,
cinematography and Denis Villeneuve and Josh Brolin and Benicio del Toro and Emily Blunt, they were so good in it. It really deserved to do better. Although it did get a few Oscar nominations, I don't think it won anything. I wonder what it's so specific and so specific a story that I would never have thought that anybody would choose to make a sequel to it. So, I mean,
let alone a trilogy.
So I was surprised, like, who asked for the sequel? Because it doesn't lend itself. It's such a specific story, sure, about that time. It doesn't seem like a sequel generating kind of film. But that's a whole other thing. I think it's an exceptionally well-made movie. It's very beautifully pieced together. It plays like an edge of your seat action film through much of its time. But I had like almost a couple of fatal issues with the movie, which really bothered me. And ultimately, I just felt like when the original Sicario was full of soul, this one had no soul at all. It was just kind of a by the books, a very exceptionally made by the books action film. Very effective. But I have a couple big issues with it.
Yeah. I'm with Yazdi more than Rashmi. I mean, I think the original Sicario was just so well judged, and I think the moral dilemmas that it put into play, the kind of question about, you know, how, when is it okay to do wrong, to do right, and, you know, what the role of government is, and, you know, should we, you know, presumably these types of things that the movie talks about, you know, they're well within, you know, the realm of reality. I think these kind of things do happen, and we try and promote the greater good as a society by having these dark things happen. That movie was a really nice exploration of that. This movie felt like it was doing more of the same, but it went so wrong in terms of where its particular moral compass lies. I think it introduced a couple of very implausible, almost fantastical plot elements involving a little girl, and a couple of very violent scenes in the movie also struggled with me for plausibility. And then obviously the very final where one of the main characters ends up going in the movie then just kind of jumped the shark for me as far as believing what transpired. And so all of those things, you know, effectively took me out of what was a very well executed slick action thriller. And so, you know, I'll stop there, but I mean, not even close to the original from my perspective.
Yeah, and again, what I'd encourage you to do is watch the original again. For me, because for me what it did was it became the exposition that allowed me then to understand what was happening in this movie. And I too, like you, Joe, was struggling for about a day or so because I couldn't get this out of my mind. This had a huge impact on me. And I was thinking about the end, and I don't want to give away any spoilers. So once the show's over, I'll tell you my take on what I think actually happened, which made me think, wow, if that's really what happened then this is a really, really smart movie. I mean, you know, the beginning of this movie could totally have been, I think, an infomercial for the current administration, for border security and the travel ban. But I'm really happy that that was kind of scene setting and almost disposable. And that's what's actually in the trailer. What comes next is a slightly more involved story. And it's not the movie that I thought it was going to be. So a lot of this may be around expectation setting as well.
Yeah, so that initial part of the movie I thought was really bothered me because It's sort of a red herring, but and to their great credit, I'm sure when they started writing the script for this or started directing this, they had no idea. This might have even been before, you know, our last elections, but it has landed in theaters squarely at the time when this is at the top of everybody's minds in terms of politically. Yeah. We are having this debate about immigration and borders and how we treat people who show up at our borders. And this movie is about all of those issues. Yeah. And so in
like it couldn't be more perfectly timed.
It couldn't be more, but it seems like for a movie which deals with all of these topics, it's almost afraid to take a political position. I mean, you need to be, and I know it wants to be objective and saying this is what happens, you make what you will out of it. But then you cannot have the first 10 minutes of the movie showing, you know, a Muslim guy going and blowing up a grocery store or somebody, you know, trying to cross the border and leaving a prayer mat there. That's in really poor taste. If that's not where you want to take your story, why are you putting those elements? Because all you're doing now is giving fodder to the Trump supporters. You know, politically, it just seems misguided. Like, so that piece really bothered me. But I'm going to set that aside. The other thing which really bothered me, you know, like...
I'm with you on that.
Yeah, Dunkirk. This is a movie which is about men, okay? And it's a very masculine movie. And there's nothing wrong with very, very masculine movies. But it goes through this whole effort of making the case that the two protagonists, played by Benicio del Toro and Josh Brolin, are so far gone with their morality and so far gone in this complete nasty mess that is where everything is morally ambiguous, that they have completely lost sight of everything, that in the last act of the movie, then it suddenly makes a turn and suddenly gives them a heart. And you now you expect me to sympathize. You've been making me watch this movie for an hour and a half about these men who are doing horrible things, and you're saying that's just the way it is at the border. Everything's messed up. But then now you're saying, oh, no, wait a minute. These guys are good after all, and they suddenly develop a heart. And I'm like, no, you don't get to have your cake and eat it too. So it really, that part bothered me. Like, yes. Stop jerking me around.
See, I could live with that. But that's a long, long discussion about sort of human behavior, right? Which is not what this podcast is about. But we can talk about that after. But I think, to me, if you just think about the mission of the movie, is to go and cause chaos and cause war in another region, i.e. Mexico or South America, to benefit another country, mm-hmm. right? So if you just take it at that, then it becomes quite an interesting geopolitical tug of war, right? And it shows you how perhaps smuggling of bad people from one region to another through ship tankers has an impact on... To me, it's about... We are a global nation now, and ramifications of one thing going wrong somewhere have a huge impact on another country somewhere else. So I could see it for that, but I'm obsessed with news and geopolitics. So maybe I should. I will give you the end became a little bit Walking Dead, but we can talk again. We won't give away spoilers. We can talk about that after.
Yeah, it's a pure concession to making a sequel. In my mind, you know, I think they chose to end the movie a certain way for dramatic effect, but then...
But that's the twist I'll tell you about when the podcast's over, because I thought about that a lot.
And my honest opinion is that that was kind of a reshoot later on. It was like, you know, we can't kill this. Let's make this a trilogy, you know. But anyway.
But that's what I thought a lot about.
Yeah, I mean, I think...
I have a theory.
We're talking in the abstract here because we don't want to give spoilers.
Yeah,
but so I actually
very interesting for our listeners.
I mean, I love this movie for its craft. I cannot imagine how much research must have gone into this movie, and I cannot imagine. I think the heaviest load here is carried by the production designer, somebody who is trying to authenticize what's really happening along the borders.
Technology that's used in sort of like the heat, the heat infrared. Detection, yeah, the correct. Infrared, the right. the setup of how ops are done.
Right. So from a craft perspective, and again, just as a pure thriller, the movie is faultless. It's very well made. But, you know, I mean, I think you alluded to this earlier that, you know, like the first movie, Sicario, the audience is kind of allowed to see what's happening through the eyes of the Emily Blunt character.
I was going to say, we're Emily Blunt right. in that movie.
So I think that's to the movie's great betterment because it kind of stabilizes everything. You know, there's a lot of craziness going around, and you know, watching the movie through her eyes really stabilizes it. And I really miss that perspective in this particular movie. And I think you were alluding to this earlier, but the only female character of any importance is this little girl. She's pre-teenager, maybe teenager.
Isabel Mona,
who plays Isabella, who plays Isabel, who's the daughter of a cartel leader in Mexico. And you know, she's the only one big female character in this movie. But although nothing really bad happens to her, so many unwatchably bad things happen around her that I felt bad for that character. I felt like no person should have to be witness to so much violence. And you know, it's one thing if this is what really happens. I don't know what really happens, but it just seemed like it was done to shock and awe the audience. And then it felt really irresponsible. Really, she needs to have people like have her face sprayed by blood, by people dying around her all the time. It's like, come on.
By the time the third
or fourth set of
blood was wiped from her brow, I was like, oh, come on.
Okay, I was sticking my hand up in the air. Yes, me, please. Yes. Okay, so for me, it's very poetic in the sense of sometimes you pay for the sins of your father,
sure,
right? And so for me, this is payback, and it doesn't matter. You know, this is what they're showing us is this is a girl, and I think she did an amazing job. I think she did a really, really good job, and I really look forward to seeing her in more stuff. This person is a princess. Right. They want for nothing. They go to the best schools. She's got a, you know, an attitude because of who her father is. But there's another side to that. There's the burden of who her father is. And she's paying for the sins of her father. And so therefore, it's like, well, you know what? You're in no man's land. There are no rules, and you are prime fodder. Okay, I can wind this one up. So my heart was in my mouth the entire movie, and I just didn't know what was going to happen. Each turn was a total surprise. I think this is one of the first action movies I've seen where I felt that things weren't dumbed down. And there's a lot of things happening, a lot of strings here. And halfway through, I just didn't know how it would come together, but it does, and it was bodacious. This is a tight, thrilling action movie that looks at one aspect of geopolitical activities in a really interesting way. 9 out of 10.
Wow.
I love this movie. I want to go and see it again.
Yes, they.
So this movie's I just wanted to mention a thing about this movie's directed by Stefano Solima, who I was told directed this amazing movie on Netflix called Gomorrah. It's an Italian crime movie, which is so good. It's on Netflix. You should watch it. So I'm glad that they're kind of not just going within the pool of the young up-and-comers within Hollywood, but reaching out, you know, internationally to bring good directors in. I think, again, from a craft perspective, just if you want to completely divorce yourself from any kind of moral questioning, this is a very accomplished film, and easily an 8 out of 10 for me. But the morality of the movie really bothered me at every step. And it's funny because, like you, Joe, I love every script that's been written by Taylor Sheridan. So I don't know if the script was modified a lot, because it just seemed very irresponsible. There is this whole underlying thread through the movie, and maybe it's a spoiler, but there's this whole underlying thread about this boy who, you know, he's Latino, and he's growing up, you know, along the border, and he's kind of being pulled into a life of crime, you know, and he has a major role to play towards the end. But it just felt contrived to me.
That's my theory that I'll tell you about after.
But I think everything you need to know about the movie is in the title, Day of the Soldado. That's neither here nor there. Just call it Day of the Soldier, or call it Dias de la Soldado. I mean, Sicario, nobody knew what Sicario meant, right? But people figured it out. So commit to it. I mean, take a position politically. Don't just say everything is effed up and this is how the world is, which maybe it is. But I want a movie about this topic to kind of take a position, which it didn't. So 6.5 out of 10.
Which you will?
Which I will, from a craft perspective. No, I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10.
And I'm going to go with a 7. It doesn't hold a candle, in my opinion, to the original Sicario. It's a very enjoyable movie, and it's a good, fast-paced kind of action thriller, but it it really struggles with me to remain plausible. And I think even though these stories can be fantastical, the fact is that they need some kind of grounding, which Sicario really had in spades, and this one did. Sicario, by the way, does mean hitman, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I should also add that, by the way, Benicio del Toro is God. He's so good. He's so good here.
Yeah, he and Brolin are very good. But they're characters that I feel like I've seen before from them. I mean, you know, Brolin is very much
from... In Sicario.
No Country for Old Men, Brolin. You know, he's that gruff. Yeah, it's fine, but...
But the one scene that you guys found most objectionable towards the end, I agree with you, but I think it really just goes to show how good of an actor Del Toro
is. Sold it.
Because he sold it in spades. My initial thought was, no, you're not doing that. But then the way he did it, I was with it. I was completely with it. I believed it to the last minute. And that's what good actors do. So he really did.
Yeah.
I mean, it almost felt like something out of The Revenant. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was pretty good.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, listeners, because you don't know we're what talking we're talking about here.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe we
or if you do, let us know if you felt the same.
We can do a spoiler podcast perhaps on this one. Okay, let's move on quickly to the final movie of the week, which is Sorry to Bother You.
Okay, so in an alternate present-day version of Oakland, telemarketer Cassius Green discovers a magical key to professional success propelling him into a macabre universe. This is directed by Boots Riley. Yes, that Boots Riley of the hip-hop world. It's written by Boots Riley, and it stars Lakeith Stanfield. This is someone who we had pointed out in Short Term 12. And recently made an appearance in Get Out. Tessa Thompson, who was recently in
Dear White People, I think.
Yeah,
Dear
and White she was People. In Ragnarok.
Yes, and she was
as the Valkyrie. Right.
She's also in Janelle Monáe videos.
Yep, and Jermaine Fowler and Armie Hammer and a whole host of others.
Terry Crews.
Terry Crews, yes.
So, Yazdi, kick us off.
So
take it to the end.
I'm dying to talk about this one.
I know,
by the
me
way.
Too.
Yeah, I.
But we should make a prediction. Do we think Joe will hate it or love it?
Joe will love it.
I think Joe will hate it.
Okay. Joe will love it.
Yazdi.
Don't disappoint me, Joe.
Yazdi.
This movie is like a bad dream, and it's so completely willing to jump off the cliff, and it just repeatedly keeps jumping off the cliff again and again and again, and. I think in our kind of homogenized, pre-chewed, pre-digested stuff that gets screened on movie cinemas these days, this kind of absurdist sci-fi film is like a breath of fresh air. I loved it.
Joe.
So here's what I'll say. At least to introduce this one. So when we came out of the movie, there's a lot to process in this movie, right? And so I came out and I said to the representative from the studio, who always asks for a comment immediately after we've watched the movie, which I felt was kind of unfair for a movie of this nature. So I said, I've never taken LSD in my life, but I think I now know what it's like, because... This movie was a complete brain fuck. I mean, I don't know what I saw.
You know what you saw, no?
I don't know what I saw. I didn't see what I was expecting to see, which was in the trailer. I don't know what happened to me having seen the movie. And I can't really say that I enjoyed the experience. I'm sorry. It was too much.
We've been together a long time.
This was another.
Damn it, Joey! Me down.
This was another dose of Holy Motors.
No, it's and not. Holy
again, for listeners that may not have followed us for a long time,
no, it's far
Holy
more.
Motors was a movie from I don't know 5-6 years ago, which we had a very interesting debate on our podcast because I couldn't follow it, and these two wackos across the table from me.
It's far more linear than Holy Motors.
Yeah, okay. So that's what I figured. Okay, so it's been a few days since we saw the movie, and I'm still not sure how to review the movie because I'm not sure that most people will be able to get past the absurd to see what's hiding underneath, which is really a biting satirical mm-hmm. exploration of America, including the race, including race, the role of corporations and big money, and the ever-growing division of poverty and how that eliminates choice.
Amen, amen, amen. Yes, all of those things. This is what I wrote. It's a satire of race, and not only a satire of race, but it's a brilliant satire of racial relations in this country, because the Oakland that you see is set in 2018, but it's nowhere like the Oakland of 2018. It's some hyper realistic version of it.
Yeah.
It's a satire on industrialized labor and how we are getting closer and closer to essentially, like, you know, capitalized slavery. And I know I'm completely drunk the Kool-Aid that the movie's off. Yeah, it's a metaphor.
It's a metaphor, right, for the rat race.
And it's a satire on hipster art. It's a satire on policing. It's a satire on
no rules, big corporation. Correct. The lengths that people will go to make money.
Now, does it hit all of those targets? No, it does not. But God knows it keeps trying.
Yeah.
And I just enjoyed the fact that
Joe's looking at us like, what the hell are you? What the hell are you guys talking about?
I defy anyone. Pick a scene from this movie. Pick any scene from this movie. And there's about five or six things going on there. I mean, there's so many ideas thrown during each screen. I mean, this movie is just bursting with concepts and ideas. And it's so messy because scene by scene, you have to figure out what's going on. And some of the stuff you get, some of the stuff you just scratch your head. But I just love that there's a filmmaker who has just this overabundance of ideas, who has so much to say. And, you know,
and that, Yazdi, I think, is the failing of the movie. So I think to those of us that don't need, that enjoy this kind of abstract absurdity, and I think both of us do more than someone like Joe, I don't think that most people will make it through the Saturday night skit to get through to the parts that matter. And I think if you get to the heart of the movie, there's a lot waiting there for you. But I just really think that's going to be very, very difficult for most people.
For somebody like me, it's just too much work.
Right.
You know, from the point at which the Armie Hammer character comes into kind of focus in
wearing
the movie,
a skirt, no
well,
less.
Like there's the kind of Wolf of Wall Street bit where, you know, he's this excess, and then the movie becomes completely unhinged, in my opinion.
Correct.
But I know it's got all these clever, wonderful things to say, but I was too bothered by the nonsense that it was spewing in my direction.
But it's not nonsense.
To make, I mean, again, this is a really difficult review because
everything's a spoiler. Yeah.
Spoilers, I think, are the movie's marketed a certain way, and I think that's intentional.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so, that's what will get people through the door.
So the experience of watching the movie is very different to what the movie, at least, purports itself to be about.
Yeah.
And it's not, they're not completely divorced ideas. It's just they're...
That's kind of like the most common denominator of it, in a sense, right?
But for me, it kind of lost the plot at that point.
Yeah.
And it got zanier and zanier and zanier. And for me, it was trying to be too clever. And that's just the world through the lens through which I view movies and you know, want plots to kind of take me along with them. This movie's just like, you know, it's going left, it's going right, it's going up, it's going down, it's going backwards, it's going through itself. I'm like, what is going on here? This is loud nonsense.
But I think if fundamentally it's not incomprehensible, right? The story as it follows, it's this character's journey. And towards the end, it flips over into the surreal. Fine, but maybe until the last 10 or 15 minutes, I think it's comprehensible. I mean, it's not Holy Motors, like there's just random things happening.
Okay, so maybe it's like a bad version of Mother, you know, from last year. Bing! Where Mother is also a movie that goes rapidly from, like, nonsense to nonsense.
Sure,
and bigger and more, and it's very metaphorical. But why do I love a movie like that and this movie struggles? You know, I mean, I think the difference for me there is Mother isn't so overflowing with excessive ideas. So there's lots of beautiful metaphorical images in the movie, But it's all about one thing. This seems to be like a whole hodgepodge of things vomited onto the screen in front of me.
I think that, again, I'll go back to, I don't think this is a movie for everyone. And I think that if you need a more linear story that doesn't go to crazy town, then this isn't for you.
Yeah, but it's running at 96%.
By critics.
Yeah, so I don't know how this is going to translate. At least
you're all on drugs.
At least in the theater, everybody seemed to be really laughing and enjoy. I mean,
what was interesting was I think, sorry, Yassi, to cut you off. What was interesting was there's a lot of cultural references here to being African American that I really heard a lot of the audience who are African American laughing at, which I didn't find funny. I found other things funny. But I think there's a lot of cultural references. I mean, is this going to be the next Get Out? I think it's too absurd, unfortunately. It's too absurd to be, but I think it has more to say, in fact, than Get Out did. And it's along the same themes. But I think it's even richer in its message. But it's too absurd.
Yeah, and
for most people.
Yeah, and you know, I kind of pooped all over Sicario, right? Day of the Soldado. Because I think it refused to take a stand. And this movie, again and again and again, takes a stand saying, you are bad
loudly
guy.
Loudly and proudly.
Loudly and proudly. You are a bad guy. Shame on you for doing this. Shame on you for allowing this to happen. Shame on thing for perpetuating it. So through what is absurd, every one of those instances, I saw a commentary. Now, some of that commentary is too pat. Some of it is unfair. But still, it's a very angry movie. I think it sounds very funny. But like you, if you go past all the absurdity, it's a very angry movie. And it's saying, you know, this is what race relations have come down to in this particular country. And listen, I mean, this is what I wrote in my notes, that movies these days are so overproduced and over-mechanized that, you know, what lands up in the big screen, it seems it's been systematically stripped out of any soul. And unless you are, you know, the only films with some true identity or character which show up on the Cineplex are movies made by a Tarantino or made by a Tom Ford or a Coen Brothers or Wes Anderson or David Fincher. But we don't, outside of those eclectic group of filmmakers, we don't see movies which challenge you and which kind of put your head in a spin. And
The Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Yeah, and Yorgos Lanthimos.
The Lobster.
The Lobster. I mean, I like movies which are challenging you, which are like, watch this and figure out what I'm trying to say. And I still don't know what that last 10 minutes is all about. But I'm amazed that somebody did it.
I really struggle with the idea that you can not understand what something's about, and
I think
I mean, it,
I think at a superficial level I do, but I'm trying.
I know. I'm just I struggle with that. If I don't understand something, it's like a lost cause.
Yeah, look, I think clearly this isn't a Yorgos Lanthimos school of movies, right?
But it doesn't make you, sorry, unlike Yorgos Lanthimos, it doesn't want to make you uncomfortable. You know, Yorgos Lanthimos, this is not disturbing necessarily in any way.
Well, maybe one scene.
Maybe one scene, yes. Okay. Yes.
But
yes, I know which one.
it's crazy. Crazy. Let's maybe wrap. I think we're not going to convince Joe that it's a good movie, right? I think this is just.
Yeah.
I think the best way to describe this is if you're not open to movies like Killing of a Sacred Deer or The Lobster or any of those absurd Holy Motors, even at the extreme, then you're not going to enjoy this movie. Don't go and watch it. But I love how it's made. This appeals to my sense of humor, my love of metaphors, and the absurd. I mean, Lakeith Stanfield is a standout for me, but the entire cast is great and perfectly, you know, casted. This movie has nothing to be sorry about. 9 out of 10.
Wow, 2 9s for you this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, I...
Yes,
the season has begun.
I actually don't think, maybe I'm misjudging, but I don't think this movie is as unapproachable as you both think it is. I think at face value... So I'll just give an example. There is, you know, he's trying to be, the movie starts off with him trying to break into the world of telemarketing. And the first time he starts doing it, every time he's calling somebody, the movie shows him like literally breaking into their home.
That's the normal part, though, Yasti.
But that's a great mechanism.
That's a great mechanism because it kind of
actualizes the feeling of how intrusive a telemarketer's call is. They actually show up in your home and somebody's having sex, somebody's husband is dying, and this telemarketer is literally barging into their home, appearing in front of them and trying to do something. So that to me is
very clever.
Very clever. He could have just had that character talk, you know, on the phone, but no, he actualizes him, that person, his desk literally drops in front of wherever the person is picking up the phone. So those kind of touches, I think what somebody's done is they've written a script and then they've gone and said, how can I raise this in a level? And he's consistently, fearlessly raising it a level. And sometimes the level he raises it to is incomprehensible and absurd.
Something stupid.
But it's overambitious. I really, really love this movie. I can't wait to watch it again. And
me too.
And I think of
Kali all... Joe won't be coming with us.
And actually, I think the casting is incredible. Tessa Thompson, bless her heart, is just there. She's there for the whole movie through it.
Well, just even the mechanism of using her earrings.
Yes.
As a way to send messages.
Political commentary, yeah.
It's incredible.
And Armie Hammer, I must say...
He's my favorite person.
Off late, I'm just amazed at what he's been doing. He was in, what was that movie, the shoot 'em up last year?
Free Fire.
Free Fire. He was in Free Fire. He was in Call Me By Your Name. Now he's in this movie. I think of all the actors in Sorry to Bother You, Armie Hammer is the only one who knows which movie he is in. He really understands the movie and his role in it, and he just goes for it. So anyway, 8.5 out of 10, which... Because nobody's making movies like this, I'm also going to bump it up to a 9 out of 10. Yeah, it's just...
Okay. High five, yes, D.
It tells me something is right with the world.
Correct.
If this is not going directly to video and it's showing up on a film screen, half the battle is won. I'm just glad.
I'm the same. I mean, put this against Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
Which is,
sorry, Joe, I didn't mean to beat you up. But.
No, it's okay. I mean, look, I've made it like I hate the movie. And you reminded me that the first two-thirds of the movie, to be honest, is more accessible. It's kind of an offbeat goofball comedy with some very clever satirical messages behind it. I find offense with the last part of the movie, and only because it completely goes like to crazy town for me. And I think, yeah, that crazy town moment, I couldn't link to the rest of the movie. And that just frustrated me as a viewer. And I don't like that feeling of frustration. It leads me to kind of, it makes me angry. And so, yeah, that's kind of where these emotions are coming from. But I mean, I'm going to give it probably a higher than expected 5 out of 10. But you know, it's a very, I'll give you that. I'll give you, it's got, you know, 20 out of 10 for originality and ambition. You know. Ugh. And I can't believe we made it through the entire review without mentioning horse people.
We did.
On that note,
yes.
Let's wrap up the podcast. Mail at movieworlders.com, twitter.com/movieworlders, facebook.com/movieworlders as well. Let us know if these movies delighted or frustrated you. We would love to hear your comments and thoughts about that.
Company.
I'm in a complete isolation here. Like all the movies that you guys seem to love and I hate, the tomatometer is definitely on your side. I just, you know, I'm a simple man with simple tastes.
But batshit crazy is not a bad thing.
Give me a beer over some well-crafted cocktail from...
Yeah, sure. You know, look, I think it comes down to the fact that... you know, we watch a lot of movies and it takes something as crazy as this to kind of make us sit up in our seats.
All right. Until our next podcast, too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
As well.